Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Tony and Rick are here with me. Tony is looking extra sharp with a new camera. Let's jump right into the news. We got a big headline to kick it off. So Amazon shareholders are pushing for a 5% Bitcoin treasury allocation. The big players are here. Tony, why don't you kick it off? Tell me what your reaction to this is.
Game theory on full steroids, man. That's what's going on. We've been predicting this, you know, forever. Sooner or later, all roads come to Bitcoin, and now the big boys are in town, right? So what are we today? December 10th? Isn't this when the Microsoft board of directors is supposed to also vote whether they're going to be putting an allocation into Bitcoin? So can you imagine Microsoft, Amazon, and if they say yes, who do you think comes next? Apple? Google, who else? At this point, you know, man, it becomes like a, you know, boys will be boys. I mean, this is how I see it. Like once one of these guys gets into it, it becomes like a flex context, a contest, you know, like, oh yeah, you're putting a 5% allocation. We're going to put 6%. And then they start, you know, it's like, it's a cockfight between all of these guys, you know, to see who has the larger share. And before you know it, you know, the price of Bitcoin, that, you know, goes parabolic to levels no one's seen before. And the little guy who's still, you know, struggling from 9 to 5, unaware of anything that's going on, all of a sudden he wakes up to a headline that Bitcoin is $1 million. And he's like, how come no one told me about this thing? Why am I hearing about this for the first time ever, right? And it's been like over 15 years, people are harping about this, but, you know, for some reason, you know, beers and French fries were a lot more interesting, or investing in some dog coin or some Hoktua chick coin because you think you're going to get laid by spending $100 on it. So that's what's going to happen. Institutional FOMO is going to kick in. And once that starts, and I have a feeling we're just like at the tip of this floodgate, you know, busting wide open. You're going to see institutions, not just from the U.S., you know, pouring in, but it's going to spill globally. You know, everyone's going to want a share of this. And then you have institutions and governments that are going to come out publicly saying, you know, they've been buying and hoarding or mining this, you know, in private, because now all of a sudden it's the best thing since sliced bread. It's amazing for national security. It's the best thing to boost the economy and a whole, you know, roster of benefits. And so, you know, all roads lead to Bitcoin. It all starts this way. So very, yeah. Very bullish. You know, if you're not paying attention to Bitcoin, you better wake up and quick.
Yeah, Rick. So I want to hear your comment, but let me make one and maybe you can respond to this. So I had Matteo Pellegrini on the podcast. So the episode will be out in a week or two. And we were talking about this and he made the point that he sees no world where Microsoft votes to adopt Bitcoin. And his reason was, Microsoft's call it a $3 trillion company and Bitcoin's a $2 trillion asset. And it doesn't make sense for a company of that size to be allocated to an asset class that's smaller than itself. I'm curious what I hadn't really thought about it in terms of market cap. To me, that doesn't seem like a showstopper because you can have a small allocation and it, you know, maybe it outperforms and, it's 5%, you know, and they're sitting, I think Amazon's sitting on what, like $88 billion or something right now that they could allocate. What's your reaction to that? And then any other comments that you might have?
Yeah, that's, I don't personally follow that logic at all, right? Because Microsoft is bigger than Bitcoin, its market cap, they shouldn't buy Bitcoin. I don't really understand that, right? They can only buy things that are already more valuable than the total, you know, assets of their company. That's a weird, to me, that's a weird way to measure, well, practically anything, right? Like, and I mean, imagine going back in time and saying, well, yeah, that was also true 10 years ago, but had Amazon bought Bitcoin 10 years ago, well, yeah, I mean, I think they'd have done quite well, right? So, yeah, no, I don't understand that. Like, what we should have learned over the last 15 years is it definitely doesn't pay to be late to Bitcoin, right? Like, even Even waiting 2 or 3 years while you think, oh, you know, I'm going to get my ducks in a row and I'm going to wait for a good opportunity or until things are more stable. Well, man, you can play that game forever, and it always turns out to be a bad idea, really, right? The upside potential for Bitcoin has always been huge, and I think still is. I mean, imagine the US government coming out and saying they're thinking of building a strategic reserve, but it not being good enough for Microsoft. I don't really understand that logic. But look, you know, here's the thing, the board. So this is just a proposal at the moment from the shareholders, right? And as Bitcoiners, we're always hungry for that any sniff of bullish news, right? So it's not like Amazon is going to start buying Bitcoin today or anything. But like, the Microsoft vote today is really interesting, right? So we're recording this on the 10th. By the time you're watching on the 11th, who knows? Maybe Microsoft bought a load of Bitcoin and Tony's bought an even better camera. I don't know, right? But yeah, you know, the chances are I've heard the board has already suggested they want to reject it. You know, so I think chances are they will reject it, and I'm over the moon about that, right? Like, I'm not a big fan of Bill Gates. I'm not gonna open that whole wormhole of conspiracy theories, right? But he's not my favorite person on the planet. So yeah, I hope he holds off. I think that's a sensible approach, Bill. You know, and have fun staying poor. I mean, you know, look, if you don't get it, then it's like, imagine waiting for the perfect time to adopt the wheel, right? That's what we're talking about here. Like, it's a new innovation, a new technology. Imagine just hold fire for a bit and see if this thing is actually useful. You're gonna regret that decision. So, look, regardless of whether these are proposals and which way they vote, we can take the signal from it, right? Which is incredibly bullish. Like, all the shareholders want these companies to be buying Bitcoin. That demand is there. It's not going away. They're gonna get on board eventually. So the signal is like, I don't know, front run them. Don't wait for them to gobble up all the Bitcoin and crowd you out. So, yeah, crazy news.
Well said. All righty. Russian Parliament deputy just proposed to create a strategic Bitcoin reserve in Russia. So we just continue the conversation of game theory. It's so interesting that this is all happening. I think I would have anticipated more co like MicroStrategy copycats, maybe a couple of additional El Salvador smaller countries, you know, who like kind of saw the trend and saw this the asymmetric upside to, you know, the opportunity of Bitcoin. It's wild to me that we're talking about Amazon, Microsoft's voting, I think today, and now Russia, you know, one of the largest suppliers of commodities in the world, you know, like this is all happening so fast. I guess I'm wondering to what degree this puts pressure on a Trump administration who has talked about it and the conversations are there. But to me, seems like I'd be shocked if until this sort of news breaks that a strategic Bitcoin reserve is really like top priority. But I wonder if it begins to bump it near the top of the pile as more and more of this news breaks. I'm curious, Tony, why don't you give your thoughts?
Yeah, of course, man. I mean, I was expecting this to be announced a lot sooner than it actually was, but this is where you see, you know, the whole government FOMO now into Bitcoin. And for Russia, it makes perfect sense. I mean, the US shot itself in the foot as soon as it weaponized that dollar. And so ever since that started, you know, these guys have been, this was a serious wake-up call for them, and they've been looking for a way out of this threat, you know, ever since. And I've said this many times. There's nothing out there that any government is going to settle on now that they know an option exists that is 100% guaranteed not to be controlled or manipulated or weaponized by any other government. See, none of these guys trust each other. So they're never going to agree on anything, you know, knowing that someone else has an edge with it over them. And so what's the only thing out there for this? They're not going to create their own currency. That's absurd. Nothing's going to work. So the only other option is Bitcoin. But now the problem is if Russia's doing it now, the US can't do anything before January 20th. So anything can happen between now and then. And, you know, again, it goes back to the comment about the institutions earlier. Now it's a race. Now the big boys are here and it's a cockfight. You know, who's going to win? Like, who's gonna be better at this? Who's gonna accumulate more of this? Not because they're gonna exert any form of control over anything. It's not. It's just like a flex game at this point. And so every country is going to need Bitcoin in order to help its economy at some point. Otherwise, it's no longer gonna be competitive on a global level. And so they need this for survival, essentially, you know, just to remain relevant in the new world that we're headed to. So, you know, I guess good on Russia, you know, if they're doing it from now, well, you know, they're ahead in the race so far.
Yeah. Rick, I know you feel about the same with nation states as you do large corporations adopting Bitcoin. Bad idea. Don't do it. Let the plebs continue to stack. But what's your reaction to this news?
Yeah, I mean, it was always inevitable, right? Like, you know, Bitcoiners have been talking about game theory for years. And I think everyone used to think we were kind of silly, right? Like, oh, what are you talking about? Governments are going to compete over your magic internet money, Beanie Baby stuff, right? Like, everyone thought we were completely out of our minds. But yeah, here we are. I mean, I have a similar reaction to you, Michael, which is you're just kind of blindsided by it, right? Like, it feels like a lifetime ago that Trump was on stage in Nashville talking about maybe, you know, having a strategic reserve in Bitcoin and stuff. And now you've got Russia, Microsoft, Amazon. It's all quite bonkers, right? And I mean, what's fascinating about this is what an amazing endorsement of Bukele's strategy in El Salvador, right? Because back when he started adopting Bitcoin, you know, God, the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, everyone just panned him, right? As a crazy, some sort of crazy idiot. And now you've got America and Russia sort of, you know, positioning to adopt Bitcoin. Wow. I mean, Naib's absolutely smashed it, right? What a sort of visionary move for a leader. I mean, he probably has a huge advantage in that a smaller country is easier to maneuver than the big oil tanker that is the US or Russia, right? But still, what an amazing achievement. But yeah, like you touched on, you know, it feels like an end of an era. It really does. Like it's a weird sensation. It's almost a bit sad, right? Because like I really root for the underdog. And the thing that brought me into Bitcoin in the first place was just this amazing idea of like, oh, imagine being able to just do business and transact with people without dealing with a government or people getting in the way, like, you know, free trade and all this sort of stuff. Like that's my favorite thing about Bitcoin. So, but that's not going to stop the inevitable juggernaut that is Bitcoin sucking in everyone, including governments, into its orbit. So look, you know, again, like I mentioned before, it's just a proposal. So again, like Putin's not just suddenly going to buy up all the Bitcoin tomorrow. But man, how many signals do you need, right? There's still a huge opportunity here, but the window is starting to close. And if you're competing with buyers like this, then you're not going to end up with a huge amount of Bitcoin for yourself. So, man, I mean, things are going to get crazy, right? You've heard all the theories about diminishing returns, right? Oh, Bitcoin will get less volatile. You know, it won't appreciate. I'm not so convinced. I mean, you know, you've never seen buyers like Russia and the US, who control basically all the wealth and commodities in the world, pretty much, right? Competing over this. I think it could get more volatile. I think the returns could be more insane than anyone realizes. So, yeah, my advice is, and what I'm going to try and do is just maintain your sanity if you can, right? Because things are going to get really silly.
Yeah, but hold on, Rick. I'll push back a little bit on this. How do you see it becoming volatile if all these big nations are FOMOing in on it? Like, I mean, for it to become volatile, they would have to sell large amounts of it, right? Why would they sell? What would they sell for, rather?
Well, right? You'll have to ask Germany. You'll have to ask Germany, because those crazy gringos told it.
Fair point. With the exception of a few dummies, you know, like people that know what they're doing, why would they sell? Or rather, what would they sell for?
Well, the volatility could be to the upside. I mean...
Okay, to the upside, yeah, I don't really consider that volatility. I consider that, you know, the natural progression of things.
Fair.
I mean, if they wanted to sell it for their local currency, why would they sell it when they just can hit one button and print that garbage? Like, they don't need to sell the world's scarcest asset for their local money or for any fiat currency. So this is why I'm not sure going forward we will see the volatility that we're expecting to see, you know, every four-year cycle. Yes, maybe there's some, you know, pullbacks because some people have to sell for whatever reason. Fine. But those big nasty drops, you know, those 70, 80% drops, like, I mean, where would you see those anymore when the majority of, like, not the majority, but like a big amount of the supply is now held by governments and big institutions that are building, you know, business models over them? I just don't see it. And so the little guy, you're absolutely right. The little guy was supposed to be taking advantage of this. But if the little guy is, you know, out eating French fries and not paying attention to anything, like who's to blame? Right? Like,
yeah, I mean, you can only help
those that help themselves. You can't force anyone to do anything. And most people still laugh at it because, like, I mean, the general population to this day will come up with 101 reasons as to why Bitcoin is no good.
Yeah, and you got to remember, Germany sort of tripped into its coins, right? It wasn't building up a strategic reserve and then changed its mind and decided to sell. I mean, I assume it was confiscated from a hack or some crime. I don't even remember the scenario now. But I think we see if we have hundreds of thousands, maybe a million, couple million coins locked up in what are designated reserves, I think volatility decreases a lot. I still think you have retail and institutions taking profits at certain like psychological milestones. We hit 500K or a million, just kind of like we've seen at 100. I think that's what's happening is people are taking a profit because they've had in their mind, like, that's when I've made it or whatever, which I think is a silly high time preference behavior. But yeah, I think a lot of like the dips we see moving forward, if these reserves come to pass, and I talked about this on Banter a week or two ago, I think the dips become, you know, 10%, 20%, maybe you see a 40 or 50% dip, you know, as things get sorted out. But I think the days of like the 80% drawdowns would be effectively over because you have to imagine too that Russia and the United States aren't the only two big players. And if like, that's how the game theory works, is if they get in, all the little countries definitely get in, right? Like, they've seen El Salvador already. And if they get in, China is going to have to consider this, whether they like it or not.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, maybe I'm like a little bit more bearish on the intelligence of politicians, and also I do think about a little bit about their incentives, right? I'll tell you a story about a very stupid politician in the UK called Gordon Brown, right? Who famously sold all of the UK's gold at like rock bottom prices, right? Absolute lunacy. And I think, like, well, okay, maybe if you have more conservative governments, right, they're more likely to hold it. But what you can't predict necessarily in the future is, like, let's say a government, what do politicians want, right? There's a saying that goes, all politicians want to rule well, but most of all, they want to rule. And one way that politicians get into power is by promising their constituents that they're just going to spend endless money from the endless money tree. And I think a lot of politicians are still not going to understand fully the scarcity of Bitcoin, just like a lot of Bitcoiners don't. So could I imagine, right? It's just I'm not saying this is guaranteed, but could I imagine, like, you know, I don't know, who says Kamala doesn't get in the White House in 4 years' time, right? On a policy of everybody's going to get free, you know, I don't know, like a free Mustang and a big pack of donuts or something, right? Like, I'm not saying it's likely. And, you know, if there are other nation states acting as buyers, it could well reduce the volatility. I just like to tell people that, I don't know, man, like, throughout everything, the volatility has been like this defining thing. And when everyone's thinking that it's going to decrease, just I'm quite happy to sit through it, by the way. Like, I don't mind the volatility. I'm just, let's hope it's up only. But I've heard that before, and I'm scared to bet on it.
Yeah, you got to be ready for anything. None of this constitutes financial advice to those listening. Alrighty, up next we've got Justin, publicly traded mining company Riot to raise $500 million to buy Bitcoin. So, Rick, I think you've looked into this story a bit. Why don't you share your perspective? Is this a Sailor copycat sort of thing? What do you think this means?
It seems so, yeah. I mean, the market's alive, isn't it? Like, if you go anywhere near Bitcoin Twitter now, it's almost become like MicroStrategy Twitter, right? Like, you're thinking, bloody hell, we were all talking about Bitcoin last week. And hey, man, listen, you know, MicroStrategy, you know, buying Bitcoin is an interesting story. Michael Saylor's done a great job, like, explaining Bitcoin and sort of putting the ideas out there. And, Like we said, Amazon, Microsoft, they'll all join in eventually. And look, it seems like Riot's doing the same thing, like issuing these convertible debt notes, right, to raise money to then go and buy Bitcoin with it. Now, that's quite interesting, right? Because those convertible notes can be converted back into stocks and shares. So I guess the play is you buy those convertible notes, the value of the stock goes up because they bought Bitcoin and Bitcoin went up, and then you convert into that stock, and there you are making nice money and maybe multiples on Bitcoin's gains, right? The thing is, there's no such thing as like an infinite money glitch that can last forever, right? Like that just doesn't make sense to me. I don't see how that could be possible. Now, I'm going to caveat this before the whole of Bitcoin Twitter decides to absolutely dogpile on me, which is like, look, I have money that's locked up in a pension that I'm not allowed to touch because the UK government are communists, right? And I'm fortunate enough not to have a financial advisor, right? I'm pretty stupid, but I'm not that stupid, right? So I'm all in MicroStrategy and my pension, right? So it's not that I don't understand what's going on and that the potential upside is huge, and because I can't buy Bitcoin with it, I bought MicroStrategy with it. But here's the thing, right? First of all, let's get back to Riot, right? They're not putting all of that money into Bitcoin, right? They're going to spend some of it on God knows what, right? Maybe
Acquisition,
new
I think
mining.
acquisitions, and yeah, I saw a couple different things.
This is it, right? And like mining's a cutthroat, ruthless business, right? Like for example, imagine you go and raise a load of debt, you buy a load of miners, and then Bitcoin does have a big 60, 70% dump. All of a sudden, you can find yourself in like an unprofitable position as a miner, right? So, and this treasury that you just bought dropped 60 to 70%. Now, all right, maybe you could raise the debt very cheaply, and it's fine, right? My liquidation price is miles away. I can service this debt. It's not a problem. We'll wait for 10 years. However, whether or not the rest of the market is rational enough to understand that and say, yeah, no worries, we see the bigger picture, we're going to hold our Riot stock for the longer term, what you might see is what you always see: everybody panics, oh my God, right, get out of it, Riot's not profitable at this at these levels, Bitcoin might die, sell, and the whole thing cascades into a crazy shit show. And the same thing might be true of MicroStrategy. I would imagine, Saylor raises debt at such a cheap level, and for him to be offside on his Bitcoin trade now, Bitcoin would have to go extremely low. So the rational position is, well, yeah, holding MicroStrategy for the long term does make some sense. But that doesn't mean that all the actors on Bitcoin Twitter are going to act rationally if a bear market shows up. In fact, history shows us almost certainly not, right? Like it's for all the people who write really detailed, intelligent, well-researched threads about the risks and how it plays out, there are a load of people who just throw money at the latest ticker that they see, and they'll also sell it just as fast. So here's my advice to people, right? Like if your money's tied up in a pension and you want some, proxy bets on Bitcoin, then sure, MicroStrategy, Semler, Riot, why not? And risk your money there. But if you've got money outside of that you have access to, then don't buy the stock that buys the Bitcoin. Just buy the Bitcoin. It's like JP Morgan had this quote that said, gold is the money, everything else is just credit. Well, the truth now is that Bitcoin is the money and everything else is just credit. So, they're all IOUs. It could turn against you. There's no such thing as a risk-free trade. So just be careful out there. And I have a lot of pals who've been in Bitcoin a long time who in previous cycles bought a lot of mining stocks and didn't do too well. They still complain in the group chat about whether they're going to break even 5 years later. So I don't know. Maybe this time's different. Maybe not.
Tony?
Yeah, man, I don't have much further to add to this. I mean, when you start understanding Bitcoin past a certain level, you just stop wasting time with anything else that is not Bitcoin. For me, it's too much of a gamble, too much of a risk, too much of a complication to try to get involved in things that don't give me returns in the only thing that I consider money. It's too much of a risk. So I don't understand it fully. I'm not really keen on understanding it, fully either. So like you said, Rick, if you have money in a way that is accessible to you, you're much, much better off just buying Bitcoin if you believe in it, if you're convinced that this is the future of money, which any sensible human being would after spending just, you know, a few hours studying it, then it's a much more logical return on investment, in my opinion, because you're actually opting out from worthless paper into an asset that has value and will continue to appreciate exponentially with time because of all this craziness that's happening around it. All you have to do is just learn how to hold it yourself. Once you do that, once you master these simple steps, then just, you know, let the action take place and you just enjoy the show.
And I don't mean to speak for either of you, but that's not to say that Riot and MicroStrategy, and if Microsoft were to vote yes on this, aren't making prudent financial decisions. I mean, they'd be doing the right thing for their business and for shareholders. I fully believe the caveat is that doesn't mean you necessarily would benefit most from being a shareholder versus just holding Bitcoin because of counterparty risk. And I mean, like, I think, you know, if, like with MicroStrategy, I mean, if Michael Saylor died tomorrow, if, you know, I mean, there are just so many things that can go wrong. Never mind, you know, 10, 20, I don't even know what our capital gains tax rates are anymore in the US, but like, you know, if you want to buy, like, if you want to outperform Bitcoin and then turn that into Bitcoin, those gains, you're paying tax on that. And so you've got to way outperform Bitcoin if Bitcoin's, you know, got a 50%, you know, annual growth rate. So all considerations that I think just sometimes get overlooked in the hype and the echo chamber that is Bitcoin Twitter. So, alrighty, last one here. This is a good one. So let's watch this video.
In my budget next month, they will send you a check to buy your groceries for a month or whatever you want to spend it on. And if you're an individual earning up to $150,000 a year, it's $300. What does that look like? All right. How about that for individuals? Now, if you're filing jointly and you have a family, you need a little more, right? Mm-hmm. Families are expensive. How about this? $500. $500 for families earning less than $300,000, because I know life in New York City is expensive and your salaries may sound nice, but they don't go very far.
Dear God. I don't even know where to begin. Okay, first of all, let me comment on the presentation of the checks. So I know that $300 or $500 is a meaningful amount of money to a lot of people, but putting that on a giant check that usually is reserved for, like, you just won $1 million is the most anticlimactic way you could possibly present this to everyone. Like, I don't even know what they were thinking. Tony, so they're going to combat inflation with some more inflation. I'm curious to hear, have you ever seen, I bet you've never seen this story play out, have you?
Man, how is this crazy person allowed to speak in public, man? How is she not thrown in jail for blatantly, I'm telling people, we're going to rob you blind, you know, by giving you the illusion that we're giving you money. Where is this $300 going to come from? Or that $500 check? Like, where is it going to come from? Is she going to spend it from her own personal savings account? Or is someone going to hit a few buttons, print out God knows how many billions or trillions of dollars in order to distribute these checks? By the way, how much does that each check cost? You know, the one that actually has the printed label of $300 or $500, how much does each one of these checks cost? That's a big check. I'd say, what, at least like 10, 15 bucks, you know, to make it nice and glamorous. So where's that money going to come from? So these poor suckers who think, you know, it's Christmas all of a sudden, we're going to get $300, $500. Well, you know, that chicken that used to cost, I don't know, let's say 20 bucks, all of a sudden they're going to walk into the grocery store and all of a sudden it's like 30 bucks. So that $300 all of a sudden isn't that much anymore, right? Because it's a catch 22, you know, you give it from one end, but you have to print it from one end. Otherwise, how else are you going to give it to them? So it's a lose-lose scenario. It's a lose-lose scenario. Like, I mean, the fact that she's actually out in public saying this is mind-blowing lunacy. I don't know, man. I mean, like I said, you know, you can't be bearish sometimes on human beings. She is the perfect example of this.
Rick, I know you got a kick out of this video. Tell me what you think.
Oh, man. When you sent me this video this morning, I didn't even think it was real. Like, you think it's got to be some comedian or some sketch show, right? Like, this can't be real. The way she, like, the way she pulls the little blanket off the checks. I'm like, come on. Like, Ricky Gervais must have written this, right? Like, this isn't, man, I've spoken about this before, but, like, do you ever feel like we might be in a simulation, right? And that sometimes the writers are having a bad day and they just phone it in, right? Like, oh, whatever, that script's good enough. Because is this a real person? Like, am I awake watching this? This is the governor of New York, right? And you put it best, man, right? Like, they're basically saying, well, oh man, we printed so much money that the price of everything's gone up. So let's print some more money, right? The stupidity is beyond belief. Yeah, you know, the lunatics are running the asylum. You know, I mean, the other thing that's remarkable about this, right? Well, there's a few things. Number one, right? Like, as Bitcoiners, you've got to find it a little bit amusing that she's revealing checks, right? Like, what year is this? Checks, right? I can't, man, listen. Like, I'm a millennial, right? I just about remember checks, but I can't remember the last time I saw or used a checkbook, right? That's like using a typewriter or something. And then the other remarkable thing is imagine a family that jointly earns more than $250,000 a year, right? $150,000 per year is now not considered a decent enough salary to be able to feed yourself. $150,000, right? That's the situation we're in. So,
but 300 is enough. But 300 is enough to save you.
Oh man. Oh well. Yeah, that's gonna. I mean, where do you even start? Like, I want to give this woman a calculator. Like, listen, love. You need to go and get an education from somewhere. Ideally, not one of these Ivy League universities, because they're just churning out dummies, it seems, right? And like Tony says, I mean, sometimes I think, like, oh, I've still got a little bit of empathy left for humanity. Like, you know, come on, you can adopt Bitcoin now and this sort of stuff, and, you know, try and be patient. But when people have governors like this saying this mad, mad thing on stage and they still don't wake up, and Amazon are buying Bitcoin and Microsoft and the US and Russia, and you've got this crazy woman talking about just giving out random checks like she's the host of a game show, and they still dismiss Bitcoin. I mean, sometimes you get to a point where you feel like you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, right? So, yeah, we all know how this story ends. Get on the lifeboat quickly.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up. So if you want to get on the lifeboat, you want to get some Bitcoin, make sure you do that. But you've got to protect it properly. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We can help you take it into proper 100% self-custody with zero counterparty risk. We help with online privacy phones. If you're really worried about the way of the world, we've got Plan B residency options as well. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We'd love to chat with you. Gentlemen, thank you as always for the time. It's been a blast.
Thank you, Michael.
Cheers, Michael. Guys.